Look at that. Go ahead and open that up. There you go. Dead time is incredible. I'll put that up.
Yeah,
we'll set
All right.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the formal action session of the Commonwealth Transportation Board. As our custom, would please all rise and we say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. As you all know, we had our work session yesterday, so this will be the formal action plots that we take. But before we start, we have public comment. I have here Mr. Bill Tanger. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir.
You, people, clerk has copies of my comments for all of you. My name is Bill Tanger. I represent a group called Friends of the Rivers of Virginia, a statewide river coalition with that represents approximately 24 smaller groups from around the state. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Usually, you know, too tall guy. So that's the organization I represent. However, I've been involved with a number of issues, especially recently, including I'm on the Roanoke County Stormwater Commission. I'm also on the steering committee for the Roanoke Watershed TMDL. So with that, a little background, I'll give you my comments. Okay, so two of the most important initiatives in Virginia today involve water pollution due to sediment. The first is a stormwater ordinance initiative, which is both a state and a local initiative. It's driven by river, stream, lake, and water pollution caused by nitrogen, phosphorus, and sediment. Those are the three main pollutants. The second issue is TMDL, the TMDL initiative. It's driven initially by the Chesapeake Bay cleanup. That includes projects that pollute water bodies all across the state, including the Roanoke watershed. Both initiatives involve sediment as one of their three major pollutants. Therefore, both involve VDOT. This is because VDOT is perhaps the state's largest polluter of sediment. Sediment is flushed into our water bodies from countless VDOT roads built to the standards of yesteryear that would no longer be allowed today. In addition, when VDOT took over the maintenance of county roads in 1932, it inherited roads built by counties willy-nilly in the days of rudimentary or primitive engineering standards. This is no criticism of VDOT's role as owner of older roads that are now their responsibility. The issue is what to do about VDOT inherited roads that cause sediment. An example. When VDOT inspected a sediment runoff problem in Roanoke County recently, it agreed that the problem was created by the old road. It also said the road was built properly based on the standards of the time, which is about 1932. As to fixing the problem, VDOT stated it did not have the funds. When a Roanoke County engineer looked at the site, he agreed it was a VDOT-caused problem. He also stated the county did not have the funds to fix it. In fact, Roanoke County has a long list of sediment-related problems, most of which are caused at least in part by VDOT roads. The list in Roanoke County has over 200 sites estimated at an estimated repair cost of $3.5 million. That's just Roanoke County. The proper nexus for this matter, we believe, is VDOT. Only VDOT can manage to work on the sediment runoff problems statewide with any sort of reliability and integrity. VDOT has two budgets, of course, construction and maintenance. Our proposal is that legislation be introduced to set aside 0.5% of the maintenance budget per year, roughly $10 million, to address the sediment problems from older roads. Such a dedicated fund would at least provide a starting point for these orphaned roads that need help. The amount may be subject to discussion. but certainly not the need. The common element of the state stormwater initiatives and the state TMDL programs may just be a sediment control fund dedicated to addressing the biggest offending sediment sites that have gone begging for decades. We encourage the Commonwealth Transportation Board to support legislation to create this dedicated fund to address this sediment problem. It will take time, but the problem can be made better. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask Charlie a question on that?
Sure.
Just what, I mean, I think there is a role in the sediment. How do we look at that? Is there any, I mean, is that just part of the maintenance budget? And in terms of special effort under right now,
in terms of the special effort on the ongoing maintenance,
right.
Anytime we're doing maintenance activity, we're required to comply with the state erosion sediment control laws. But in terms of, I'll call it retroactively going back and doing rehabilitative work to the facility, beyond what we're doing during the maintenance process. The challenge in some of these areas, again, very limited right-of-way.
Right.
In most cases, it's Burdack Road, we have a 30-foot prescriptive right easement and have no rights beyond the limits of right-of-way. So then it goes into, you can see how quickly it would get to a point where necessary to acquire right-of-way and easements in order to affect downstream improvements.
Okay.
Thank you.
I have no one else who has officially signed up, but would anyone else during the public comment period like to address the board? If you would, just please come forward. Okay, seeing none, we'll move on with the rest of our agenda. First topic is the approval of the minutes from July 16th. They've all been distributed. Is there a motion for approval or amendment?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Okay, Mr. Brule, looks like it's your day-to-day philosophy. So.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First item on your agenda today is a request from the town of Dumfries to make a transfer of revenue sharing funds from an existing project to complete the funding on two projects that then they can move towards advertisement.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I'd like to make a motion that it be resolved that the CTV hereby approve the transfer of the funds listed in the resolution. This has been endorsed by Mayor Jerry Foreman and the Town Council of Dumfries.
Second. There's a first and a second. Is there any other discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
Second item has to do with the Federal Lands Access Program. It is a program that's managed by the Federal Highway Administration. The state simply acts as a pass-through, and what we've been asked to do is to execute agreements with the Federal Lands Highway Division of Federal Highway to pass through funding to 12 projects that they have selected for funding in Virginia, totaling about $5.7 million. So what the resolution does is it gives the commissioner the authority to execute those agreements as they come to us from Federal Highway.
There's a motion for approval. Second.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to delay the train too much.
Okay, no problem.
Where are these projects?
There are 12 projects statewide. There's a list as attachment A to the resolution. All of them have to do with federal lands. They're either Park Service properties or adjacent to other federal lands that are managed by the federal government.
Is there a second?
Sorry.
I'm sorry. Ms. Gunnett, do you have a question?
No, I'm second.
Oh, you're a second. Okay, excuse me. Okay. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? You? Okay. Mr. Rasher. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Secretary, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman of the Board. Items 3 through 6 on your this morning's agenda. I'll be covering those. Item number 3 is a limited access, is a location approval, Pacific Boulevard, that's located in our Northern Virginia District Office. It's to widen the existing Pacific Boulevard from 2 to 4 lanes and additional construct 4 lanes on the new location. This has been endorsed by Loudoun County Board of Supervisors on June 18, 2014. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Motion.
Second.
Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, just let me add that You should be familiar with Pacific Boulevard. It's been a major initiative in Loudoun County. And, of course, it received funding from the Commonwealth Infrastructure Bank as well on capital development. And Loudoun County is looking forward to the adoption of this resolution. There's one homeowner they're still working with, but nothing major in terms of that to be resolved.
Any more comments or discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
Items 4 through 6 are limited access modifications. The first is the Meharon River Bridge in our Hampton Roads District. This is to replace existing I-95 southbound and northbound bridges of the Meharon River. The City of Emporia has endorsed the project by letter on 26 August 2014. FHWA is approved on by via letter 18 August 2014. Be happy to answer any questions.
Is there a motion, Mr. Paulson? I made a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any questions or comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. This is Mr. Whitworth. This is the Stanton District here.
Item number 5, limited access for Route 262-613 interchange. This is purpose of this project is to replace an existing at-grade intersection with a diamond interchange. And the City of Stanton has endorsed this project by via letter on 25 September 2013. Augusta County Board of Supervisors endorsed the project by letter 28 March 2014. Any questions you may have?
Mr. Chairman, this also has been a top priority for Augusta County and for the MPO, expressed verbally at both the fall and the spring public hearings. It is a safety issue. There have been a number of accidents, close calls, and some years ago, deaths. I make a motion to approve.
Motion, second. Second, Mr. Rosen. Any other comments? Yes,
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, our firm is involved in representing some of the parties here, so I'm going to stay on the vote.
Thank you for that. Any other comments or discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
Final item number 6, Route 460 Connector Phase 2, Route 609 Interchange. This is to construct Route 460 Connector Phase 2 near the Kentucky State Line to the terminus of the Coalfield Expressway, or what we call Hawk's Nest. The design hearing was held on 1-8 April 2014. Buchanan County Board of Supervisors has endorsed this by a letter on 6 November 2012. It's been endorsed by the Town of Grundy by a letter May 29, 2014. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? Comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Mr. Nelson, good morning.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I have two items, the first of which is a commemorative bridge naming in Wise County in the town of Coburn. This item has followed our processes, and we do have resolutions and support from both those local governments.
Yes, I was up my question. There's a second.
Okay.
Any discussion? Obviously, I can comment. It's always an honor, but it's always sad that we have some of the first responders that have deceased in the line of duty. Anyway, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you very much.
The second item, Mr. Chairman, is an abandonment and discontinuance as part of some work we've done to clean up our inventory on old Route 57, part of the state primary system in Halifax County. A public hearing was held. There were no comments. The residency staff has worked with the local government, and I'm recommending this for the board's approval.
Yes, this is on old Route 57, and they're abandoning a portion of the road and discontinuing a small other portion of the road. And I'll quote what the board supervisor said, because it no longer warrants maintenance at public expense. And I accept this motion.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
good
question.
Just
curious, really.
The ownership, I suspect the ownership of the state, or is that not correct?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I understood Mr. Williams' question.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious as to where the ownership went. It was
For the portion, Mr. Chairman, for the portion of the right-of-way that's abandoned, that could be, it would revert to surplus,
right.
And the department would probably end up dealing with local landowners if they had interest in it.
Mr. Chairman, there is a Baptist church that's on that road that I know is interested in perhaps selling that.
So we'll go through the normal process.
Right. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a motion for approval. Is there a second?
Second.
Any more discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Ms. Mitchell.
Good morning. The first item I have for you is adding three projects to the six-year program for 2015 through 2020. These three projects are in the Bristol District, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, is there a motion for approval or any questions?
Mr. Secretary, if I could mention, you can see under the funding source, these two of the projects were on urban formula, which is under the authority of that local jurisdiction. And the third is an HSIP, a safety project. So if there's a question about House Bill 2, these types of projects, they'll go through the House Bill 2 prioritization.
All right, is there any action here to be taken? For approval? Is there a second?
Second.
Any more discussion or questions? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
The second item I have is action on utilization of available federal funds and obligation authority. We bring this resolution to you every year. FHWA, towards the end of the federal fiscal year, identifies unused obligation authority and will redistribute it to the states. And this is delegating the authority to the secretary to take the actions to utilize that funding.
If you have comments, you'll go back.
Yes, sir. This process, again, occurs annually in late August through mid-September. We've received an award from the Federal Highway Administration, just traditional as they reapply funds. We're using this to go back and then balance some of the impacts that we discussed yesterday. At this point, we're not looking to add additional work, but it's, again, to balance our ongoing program. If there are projects in the future that we will add, we'll bring them back to you and add them as we have, as we traditionally do.
As you recall, we were concerned because of the insolvency, the pending insolvency of the Highway Trust Fund. But we made the decision to keep spending because of the time of year and didn't want to hold up our program. That had a benefit of us continuing to be eligible for these excess funds. And in fact, Department was awarded about $67 million in additional match over and above our normal match from the Highway Trust Fund. But we anticipate most of that will be used in what is going to be coming out of the budget reconciliation that was approved yesterday. And the governor says he's going to sign the holding back of the transfer of for the year of the additional sales tax money coming to transportation. We estimate that this is roughly $50 million is what that was. So this will allow us to be able to handle that without impacting the six-year plan. So, Ms. Valentine.
I was going to ask the amount or the approximate amount of the money based on the discussion
right.
yesterday.
Did you have it through?
Got it.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman? Yes.
Was that additional funding included in the numbers we looked at yesterday?
It was not.
Will we be able to see the revised numbers on that?
You can, but basically it's going to show the money's coming out of the budget and then all this offsetting.
So the bottom line doesn't change?
Bottom line doesn't change. We're hoping that it's only $50 million or so that were impacted by the budget reconciliation.
And
We were not, we didn't know about this. We applied for it, as I said, and the department does a very good job of making sure we get every penny on our obligation, and then puts us in a position to apply for any of this money that some state didn't use, basically. And we applied for it and we got this money.
I understand that. I just think if there's any significant difference in the bottom line, we ought to see the revised.
I anticipate there will not be, but we will report it if there is.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
So we're taking federal highway money and using it to balance our state budget?
That's correct.
They're okay with that?
Well, because we've been able to put it on projects that we can take state money and replace it with federal money.
I got you. So we're putting, we're spending the federal money on highway.
Yeah, which that's exactly
taking the state money off.
Taking the state money off. That's correct. Okay. Yeah. As you said yesterday, money's fungible, and what we weren't anticipating this. We were hoping. As I said, they did a great job in that. So fortuitous in some respect that we're able to do this. But yes, that's the way it will work. We'll put this on projects that allow federal to be able to take the state money.
Is there, are there any of these projects we're going to put them on that were completely funded by state funds and had no federal money on them?
I think
the reason I'm asking is that obviously once you put federal money on it, makes it.
We, our maintenance program, specifically in the area of pavement, and our pavement reconstruction or ongoing paving, sometimes what we will do is use state dollars initially to deliver that project, but it's federally eligible. So we're paving federally eligible routes, and we do it, the contracts, in a federally eligible way. We go out and we deliver these projects. Federal money becomes available. We go in after the project is completed because federal governments are reimbursable. They don't pay you up front. You do the work, and then they pay you back. We set these projects up in advance so that we do the work, and then we turn around and we repay ourselves by putting federal dollars on the project and taking the state dollars, and we're then able to reprogram them back into the maintenance program. And the other area, frankly, is as we look into the winter, we talked a little bit about saving some dollars for winter. Because we now free up state money, state maintenance money, it can be used to maintain that reserve as we head into the winter. So that's the exercise. And we could go into nauseam about it, but that's really the exercise we're taking. As the federal money comes in, we pull the state money off, and then we can use that for maintenance purposes.
That's why you see our federal reimbursement sort of at the back. We make sure we use it, and then if we get reimbursed. So they do a very good job of managing. And I can't, we don't think it's been many years where we haven't received some additional monies because we're in the position to do so.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Do we have a sense as to what the total was that was available to recipient states?
It was $2.1
billion. Right.
That was provided to all states. I think they had approximately $5 billion in requests. So significantly less than was requested. But as stated, this is the largest amount we've ever received in bonus obligation or August redistribution funds.
You're aware that every state is not the same in reimbursement apportionment. We get about 93% now with this money that goes up. You know, so, but we're actually a donor state. There are some states that are recipient states, and the apportionment works that way. We try to, with this money, we try to be in a position of bonus to get as even as we can. Okay, we voted on this yet? So, is there a motion?
So moved.
Second. Any more discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you, Ms. Mitchell.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. Item number 11 is a resolution in which the board is designating certain lanes along Interstate 95 as hot lanes. It's in association with our hot lane project that is expected to open in this year, beginning of next year. And the Code of Virginia requires that the board make this designation, and that's what the resolution is asking you to do. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. little bit of background. This is in the long-range plan of the area where these the HOV lanes will become hot lanes. So this is in the long-range planning. So the effect of this is that if you're HOV 3, you can continue to use the hot lanes with the flex transponders. But anyone else now will have to pay going through and through these lanes because of the conversion to hot lanes.
Motion, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I have a question.
Yes. Excuse, was there a second before? Second. Okay, second. Okay, yes.
So on the hot lanes, this is not on the new construction. This is on existing. I mean, I think that's important.
If I could, this segment of interstate is the entire length of the hot lanes project. It includes from the area at Garrisonville at exit 143. It's actually 143.6 on the interstate at Garrisonville. Those are new lanes. New capacity. Then they transition to the existing lanes in Dumfries, and then this runs up to there's a flyover just south of Duke Street on 395. So it's a combination of the existing lanes where we've added some capacity and the new lanes. This conversion from HOV to HOT, it becomes effective when the lanes open to traffic. But this conversion is required under the code and allows for, again, the use of these lanes under the HOT provisions. It requires that three or more passengers in the vehicle to be free. That does not impact this particular stretch of highway because it already is HOV free. It also, as well, eliminates the hybrid exemption.
It does.
So the hybrid exemption, which has been in place on this particular road by code, removes that hybrid exemption. The hybrid exemption is a fairly limited group of motorists in Virginia. Those plates, I don't believe, are issued any longer.
No, they're grandfathered on 95, and now subsequent plates were grandfathered on 66 as well.
But only the grandfathered plates are even eligible under the clean fuel provision. Motorcycles, I believe, still are free under the HOT law. Mass transit is still free. And emergency responders in the conducting of their duties, not for commuting, are not. So again, if they're on duty and responding, they are exempt from the HOT provision.
Right, and I don't have a problem. I just want to, having just been through the P3 process, I'm trying to make sure that this is, it's coming out the way you went in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And because we're tolling existing.
Not tolling existing. It's all new capacity.
It's all new capacity.
Yeah, all new capacity. And I will say that the concession here has done a very good job of communicating to the public and public outreach and upon themselves. So this has been well communicated and to the public, unlike some other issues that we're dealing with. A lot of public outreach, so I think we're in good shape. But it is new capacity.
And we are proceeding with due haste to get these open. And believe me, anybody who's been between Richmond and Northern Virginia in the past 2 years is going to be down their knees praying that these are open.
Knock on wood, I think this is wood here. There's been no fatalities of construction workers during this, which is really amazing because the traffic has been supposed to be maintained at 55 miles per hour. So it will be great for a lot of safety reasons we complete this work, and it's actually ahead of schedule. Towards the end of this year or first of next year, and that is ahead of schedule. And that's it.
Secretary?
Yes.
Just a point, I know we have discussions about having one of our CTP meetings in the Northern Virginia area.
I think it's going to happen right after the first of the year.
Right. But the point I wanted to make was that the, Transurban, who is basically focusing this project as well as Beltway, the hot lanes, has a terrific operations center out there, somewhat similar to the one you saw yesterday, Smart Road. So I would encourage us, if there's time, to take a look at that, but I would have to
Strike, you'll be happy to know that in Melbourne, Australia, they monitor this road too. The stream was 495 hot leads, and that's five construction. So I felt a little bit closer to home. All that stuff, so. Okay, any more discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Page?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Commemorating today is the 227th anniversary of the signing of the U.S. Constitution. We had 39 people that sat around the table and plotted the future for the United States in its own way. We've got 18 people here today that are going to help the Department of Rail and Public Transportation celebrate further using that federal funding that came out behind that Constitution. Having said that, we have a little, shall we say, sweep-up and clean-up resolution here before you today. The item that stands before you from the Department of Rail and Public Transportation is a clean-up at the end of the federal fiscal year. You know, if we don't set some of our funds in motion by the end of the month, we stand the chance of those funds going back to U.S. Treasury and other places from which they came. Having said that, we have a resolution before you that the Virginia Railway Express, Hampton Roads Transit, and our partnership that we have with Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority as a state funding partner through NVTC, the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, which Mr. Dyke knows very well, is before you. With the Virginia Railway Express action item, we are coming to you to amend the existing six-year program that stands today as acted on by the board in July to actually make better use of some flexible STP federal funds, and also in the end it will reduce the state's mass transit trust funds that are obligated to that program. By taking action today, the Virginia Railway Express Operations Board this month, I think it's Friday, is it not, Director Mitchell? This coming Friday will pass a resolution to complete this rail car purchase, which is a real landmark for Virginia Railway Express because it is a very fast-growing system, but it also has some old legacy cars that they purchased out of Chicago that are just ready for replacement. Hampton Roads Transit will be the use of some old money, again, some federal flex funds that were returned by our transit system. We're going to recycle those over to Hampton Roads Transit for their preventative maintenance program, and that's the $254,000 in funding. And WMATA is a true-up, what we refer to as a true-up. With MBTC, we fund through the six-year program budget on the anticipated expenses, and we come back and true that up. So that is a true-up of the $2.68 million that's before you as well here today. So in celebration of the maximization and use of all of the federal funds available to us and through the board, Mr. Chairman, I turn the floor back over to you here on Constitution Day.
Based on that, I have any analysis. Does anybody want to approve these six-year approvals? If only our congressional leaders would listen to that speech.
There you go.
Okay. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Any other discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman, I will, if I may, laud, and he never ceases to amaze us, but Kevin yesterday with the tour of the locomotive and his knowledge of operating this that steam locomotive has just knocked us over. Well done.
Thank you.
On that note, we'll also say we everybody had a great day yesterday. Yep. Thanks for all the hospitality in the Roanoke area for everything that we were able to experience yesterday. Tulsa, you're back.
Mr. Chairman, that's a hard act to follow, but I'm filling in on behalf of the state construction engineer and bringing two contract awards to the board with the department's recommendations for those awards. The first is Order F-76, which is a on-call pipe rehabilitation contract for Richmond District. It's being paid for with maintenance funds. We had two bidders, and Curtis Contracting was the low bidder and recommended award amount of about $7.7 million.
In the Richmond District, Mr. Cole,
move approval.
Second.
Is there any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you.
The second award, Mr. Chairman, is order number F-70. It's a Holland Road Widening Project of the City of Virginia Beach, connecting South Damneck Road and Nemo Parkway. It's being paid for out of construction funds. There were three bids. American Infrastructure is a low bidder. The recommended award amount is $30.9 million.
Is there a motion for approval, Mr. Paul?
Yes.
Thank you, second. Second.
Mr. Yearwood. Based on a closely held business relationship with the American Infrastructure, I need to abstain on this.
Okay. We have an abstention. Any other comments or discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there any new business to come before the board? Mr. Kilpatrick.
Yes, sir. We have four what we call total asset management services contracts. Those are interstate maintenance contracts that we have received bids. Made the decision that to not just bring them before you today so that we could fully brief you in October. There are three contracts in Northern Virginia and one in the Fredericksburg District. So again, before we ask you to take action, they're fairly large contracts, and the term on those is typically 5 years. So I'm going to make a briefing to the board at the October meeting and then ask for your consideration after that. So I just want to let you know that we do have those contracts coming up. In terms of service, the existing contracts carry on into next year. So in terms of transition and loss of service, that is not an issue with these four contracts.
Wanted to, Mr. Kilpatrick, this has been an issue at the board before. We had an issue in Hampton Roads where we had at least bundling of services, where we have now made a decision we are not bundling the services down there. So as Mr. Kilpatrick, give you an advance, not only the briefing, but in advance, let you look at these agreements because there are a substantial amount of money we're paying the contractor. I'm sure the two district representatives, we have like you to make sure you're comfortable with the level of service that's being done on these projects. And that I don't know of any issues about bringing it up, but we had a significant one before. Some areas we bundle, some we don't. So I just want to make sure the board's fully briefed before we ask you to vote on it. So Mr. Kilpatrick will be getting that out, and then we'll do an actual detailed presentation at the work session before that.
Chairman, will that briefing, will you include sort of current and past experiences similar with contractors, or how does how do you decide based on existing contracts going forward?
We absolutely can do that. Give you as part of the presentation of these contracts a sort of brief history and evolution of and where we are today in terms of our interstate maintenance. We'd be glad to bring that.
Thank you.
And you could also include what the price was in the premium. Is this, are you anticipating the same vendor to be awarded again? Do you not know?
At this point, we have a, I don't know what the right term is, but a likely contract. And some of those, it's the same contractor, and there are some, at least one occasion, where it's a different contract. So again, the contractors are all ones that have done work in Virginia prior. So it's not a new contractor coming into Virginia. But again, we'll put that together. I think it's good for we have a number of new members and so they understand a little bit about how we do maintenance operations on our interstate system. So that's where these types of contracts are. That's where they occur, with a few exceptions on some other limited access primary highway. But these types of contracts are used on our based on our limited access system.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Well,
is it still our experience that, by and large, the TAMS program is cost-effective when compared to the district managing it themselves?
I'm not prepared to say that it is a more cost-effective way. It is a way that we evaluate. But in terms of is it a cheaper or higher or better level of service, I'm not prepared to say that.
Mr. Chairman, I know that around the state there is some concerns about these contracts in terms of not, I know, for example, mowing not being done on time has been an issue.
and I believe those contracts have a certain number of times that they're supposed to be mowed, and I'm curious about if we're going to re-let those, or we're going to make sure there's some pretty stiff penalty provisions in there, because my understanding was there wasn't a whole lot anybody could do about it except fuss.
We are on.
That may be a misunderstanding, but that's not.
We are on at least the third generation of these types of contracts, and we learn each time how to better write the contract so that the terms are clear to both the contractor and VDOT and the compliance and enforcement mechanisms are in place. But that is one of the things. Again, we've been through several iterations of these. We've worked very closely with industry to try and align our interests in terms of making these contracts ones that are clear to understand and that they're meeting our expectations to maintain our interstate. So, again, I can bring that forward as part of this discussion at the next meeting also.
I apologize, but on my last recommendation to the vote, I do have a relationship with American Infrastructure. I'm not a different contractor. In terms of housekeeping, can we retract that and have someone else make a motion to be abstained?
Okay.
I move reconsider the vote by which we awarded American contractor.
Is there a second for reconsideration?
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Let's now go back and reconsider. We'll have two abstentions with Mr. Williams and Mr. Malvin. Is there a motion for acceptance of the contract?
So moved.
Second. Mr. President. Second, Mr. Knight. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I apologize.
That's one thing I would encourage if you feel in any way there's any perception, I would appreciate you abstaining. We've been enough through that. So I think the err on the side of caution, no one's going to question that judgment. So thank you, Mr. Malden, for that. Mr. Williams, you had a question?
Just a comment briefly about the maintenance contracts. I was there when we did it, went through all the information, and we developed all this contract and stuff. I tell you, the VDOT crews, typically I like private industry stuff. The old VDOT crews actually had a lot of pride with private. You don't get that through these contracts. You can't contract because all they want to do is race to the bottom on price, and then it's the minimum that keeps you screaming from it. And I don't know if it's really a cost saving or not. If it's not, I would always support reconsidering doing it. Our guys have a lot of pride.
And today, the other model that we use on the limited access system, we call it debundling. For years, we've relied on contractors to support our maintenance operation. The difference, though, when we debundle this contract, we are actually directing that contractor to do a particular activity. The example being mowing, we will say, we need you to come out and mow this. Stretch of highway needs to be mowed. We will direct them. We pay them on a basis of work completed. So you pay them on work units and maybe miles of mowing or acres. Or depends on the type of thing. Versus paying under the TAMS method, which is you're essentially paying them an amount of money to maintain holistically maintain the facility, and then they must meet performance standards. This is more what we've done in a number of areas is what I would consider owner-directed work. If we have patching that needs to be done, we direct them to a particular area, so you need to patch this area versus again, the other type of performance-based contract.
I could not agree more with your comments. This also requires a different skill set at VDOT. It's a management function, not an operational function. I find that we've had difficulties in making sure the contractor, we held him to the standards that he agreed to.
See it every day.
And so that's, Mr. Kilpatrick and I have been working on this, and I will tell you, as CTV members, this contract will get you more calls from the public and more the legislators in your area than about anything. That's why I want you to be comfortable with it, because it is what the public sees. And I do believe over the years we have lost a sense of pride in how our roads are maintained. Now, you know, I know we have cost constraints and the whole bit. So I think the key is, if we're going to use these contracts, that we hold the contractors accountable to the standards. And I don't think we've done a good job of that as much. We're doing better, but it's a different deal. We can't just sign the contract and say, it's their problem. We own the roads, it's our problem. And I used to be in this business in a different manner, and it's, I know I can get you in trouble pretty quickly. Because we're still, people only see VDOT. They don't want to care that ABC company is maintaining it. So I think the point about of maintaining, and that's why I want you to be comfortable with these contracts. Because there are 5 years, lots of money, and a lot of potential public input. And I will tell you, I don't think any of us would think that these highways are maintained the way we would like them to be. That may not be the contractor's fault. It could be because of the cost constraints and all that. But I would agree that our roads are not as kept maintained as the way they were in future past years.
Mr. Chairman, and to add to that, I mean, one thing I've noticed when I did a tour of the Salem District is there's a lot of off-road projects that aren't seen. Stormwater culverts, you know, where you have 60 of them on the highway that need cleaned, and those aren't the things that folks do see. And I worry and know in the Salem District there's been some issue with making sure that those culverts are properly cleaned, which goes to the sediment and DNS and all that. So I think it's on-road, but I also see that the off-road that seemed to maybe get neglected a little because we're not riding and seeing them every day.
So, Mr. Cook, I will have a robust discussion at your presentation.
Thanks. I think it is timely.
Yeah, it is timely. And please, VDOT is adjusting well and on this. I'm just saying it is the nature of it and maintaining. We don't have... VDOT's defense, they don't have, they're mandated by how many people they can have by state law. So, I mean, it's a balancing act, but this is one of the things we need to make sure we're comfortable with.
The question I had, I think as part of that brief, we need to know, I'm trying to remember, some of this was state code mandated.
That's correct.
And so we may not have all the flexibility. Yeah, or we met, but somebody that piece needs to be vetted.
And I'm not going to articulate the code verbatim, but essentially it requires the interstate maintenance to be contracted. It doesn't prescribe the method of contracting, but it prescribes that it must be contracted. There is a provision that allows the commissioner, I can always direct forces to enter into the interstate system to maintain an emergency. We've unfortunately had to do that a number of times over the years, and snow removal is an example, where we've directed state forces onto the interstate. But again, it does not prescribe the contracting method. The contracting method that we evolved towards was this performance management type, what we call, again, TAMS. But it does not preclude us from doing other types of contracting to maintain the system. If I go back 20 years now, maintaining the interstate as a resident engineer, the bulk of what we did was contract maintenance. Even then, we had a small state forces crew that would do, I'll call intermittent work, call-out type work. A lot of the work of mowing, patching, guardrail work, a lot of those things was still, even 20 years ago, done by contractors. But it was back to it. It was an owner-directed method where we paid you for the work completed, and we specified the location and the nature of the work.
Okay, any other new business to come before the board?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I wanted to ask you about the P3 problem. I thought we were going to talk about the guidelines.
No, that's going to be in October.
But aren't they being released today or not?
For comment.
If I may,
you sure
say one thing about that.
Yes.
Those guidelines, you'll be getting a copy of the revised guidelines that worked on. They're going to be released for public comment today, and we're going to have a work session on our next meeting, or maybe during the regular meeting, I can't remember. We're going to look at those and take public comment there, and then we're going to vote on them in November.
That's correct. Is that correct, Mr. Holcomb?
Yes, sir. That is correct.
That's correct.
Because that, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I just want to make sure everybody knew what was going on, because you may start getting calls about it, so you'll have it as well.
That's right. Yeah. So we'll have plenty of input also, and you should have received. I think most of you have received the revisions.
Okay. Yes. Again, today.
This will be a working process because we'll be working with the General Assembly and point out to Mr. Palin and Mr. Williams. Appreciate your efforts working with our P3 department and others and coming up with these revised guidelines. The intention is to give more transparency and more control to the Commonwealth Transportation Board on these type of projects as well as much as you do on other type of contracts. That's what the intention has been.
So, with the goal of not throwing the baby out of the bathwater.
Yeah, and this was a topic, I had a chance to meet with most of the infrastructure conference last week, and I think the risk in this is that they understand that our political process needs to be involved, better or less, but up front, we can't have at the end 140 people voting. I don't think anybody in the legislature thinks that elsewhere. So it's getting that right mix, making sure that people are informed. And quite frankly, we've had these discussions. Quite frankly, someone needs to be accountable for the last decision. That what we say we're going to do is what we've done. And if we haven't, somebody has to be held responsible for that. And that's really where we're headed with this in terms of the board and the sponsoring entity has to sign off that this is what we said we were going to do. If we don't, we've got to come back to the board or others to say we've got to rethink this. And that's it.
Thank you. I did read through, I didn't know quite when this was going to come up, so I did read through the new guidelines. And I believe it was Allison who actually pointed this out. As you're reading through it, I couldn't tell what were your new recommendations and what were the standard policies.
It's your red line.
So I think it would be helpful to know what recommendations are actually being made in this. The document is really quite good, but I didn't know quite where the changes were coming in.
You can get a red line first.
We've got a red line, and we also can do, a sheet, sort of a summary sheet that says what we're changing.
I've seen that. So
I know we have. And the main place to look, if I was thinking about it, is at the flow chart. At the decision chart, look at those, because that's changed. And
So Dusty Holcomb with the P3 office. The project delivery framework, which is the flow chart that's in there that Mr. Fraylin was talking about, is one of the key elements of it. But we can certainly get you a red line to show the changes from the 2012 version to the 2014 version so that you can see. The problem with it is that there'll be a lot of red parts in it. But what we'll also do, we have a list of where the key changes are. So there's about 28 key changes that are a part of it, where you can hone in the areas, and we'll send you that.
I think that would be very helpful for us. So then we actually
make this. This is a working process. Yeah. We will be in negotiation with the General Assembly and working through with them. So I'm just making this clear. This is not the final product. It will be a working process working with the General Assembly.
And so in October, Director Coulomet will make a presentation to you with all the different elements of the improvements to the document.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
Cox. So we'll have a list of recommendations coming out of this?
Excuse me?
We'll have a list of recommendations coming out of this?
Oh, you'll be getting the recommendations from the committee for the changes.
So they have to be approved by the General Assembly?
No. They have to be approved. We're going to suggest that we approve them. I'm suggesting to you that because of some of the issues, we will have some General Assembly legislation that we will work with them in regards. That is the issue is keeping our private sector. No one wants to chill the input from the private sector. That includes the legislature and everybody. But no one wants the result of where we are on, quite frankly, 460. No one wants that result. So the issue will be how can we get that done and working with our General Assembly partners in that. And I think the real issue is who, ultimately accountability, that they have, that we've done what we said we're going to do. And if we don't, then they have somebody that's responsible. And that's what it would be. So there will, I already know there are several pieces of legislation that are being considered. And so this is why I'm saying it's a work in process with them. Involvement of our legislature early is actually a lessening of political risk because the private sector wants to know that our political leaders favor the project. Later, the project for approval is a problem with political risk. And so that's where we're working through. I think Mr. The guidelines offer a great a way to bridge this, but we're willing to talk with our General Assembly partners as to how we get this done.
The way the guidelines are being released today is a briefing to make sure they're informed about it. And I'll just say, you know, as we make that balance, there's a reason that there's a Commonwealth Transportation Board that makes road building decisions and the General Assembly doesn't. and they know that too, by the way. The comments that we received from the legislators were, I want to say, unanimous in don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Don't make this so onerous that we will chill, to use your words, the private sector's involvement. So, and that's a chilling thing. So they know that. It's just a.
Chairman, just my last words on the subject. If we did nothing and just continued on the path we're on, there would be a whole lot of legislation that you'd be running around up there trying to consolidate and make some sense out of what we're attempting to do and asked to do by the Secretary. Put together a program that increases transparency, increases accountability, but at the same time, this is a clear message to the market that we want you involved. We want to do these things. We just need to clean up our process a little bit, and hopefully that will not short circuit the General Assembly from doing something. Just give them number one the confidence that we were aware there were problems, and we as a CTB are out here trying to fix them, and hopefully that will greatly diminish the amount of bills that we need to put in and satisfy most of their concerns. I think a lot of this stuff just been legislation.
Let me end on this. We are open for business. We will need our private sector to deliver the projects that we need to deliver to Commonwealth. So, Governor, legislature, I don't like anybody coming out of here thinking that Virginia's not going to continue to be a leader in the development of P3 programs, because we are. And that. But we also need to be accountable and be good stewards to not only our legislators, but to the taxpayers. That's really what we're going to do. So. Okay. Any other new business?
Yes. since our last meeting, I just wanted to advise everybody, and the Secretary was there, Director Mitchell, and the Governor, for the successful opening of the facility in Northern Virginia. It's been a tremendous success thus far. We're waiting to get all the numbers to find out about the new ridership. Sort of exceeded our expectations. The shopping center over in Mall and Dulles, excuse me, at Tyson's, that's now being served by the Silver Line, has seen their numbers go up. It's had some tremendous economic development impact. I just want everybody here to be aware of that, because as we hear some further discussion about how we deal with our metro system in Northern Virginia and deal with the need to expand it in order to carry all the new people that are moving to that area. That would be very helpful when we come to Northern Virginia for our meeting to perhaps get a chance to see some of that so the members can experience and understand exactly what's going on and what the need is. And also in a somewhat related matter, Roger and I have had some discussions about the fact that Richmond's now got this new Tiger grant about West Rapid Transit. And I thought it would be a good idea for maybe to use some of the folks in Northern Virginia who got some background in this area. Maybe meet with folks in Richmond to help them as they start on a new project. And so just wanted the other board members to be aware of the fact that we're going to try to share that with expertise.
And I've gotten a few requests from people to
to get a briefing on the Broad Street BRT project and the Tiger Grant specifically. I know with Roger and I think Marty as well. So we'll be setting up some briefings. And if anybody else is interested, or, you know, especially if we're going to be in Richmond in October for the meeting, we can try to coordinate something with that too if you're interested in learning a little bit more about the project. But it was a tremendous success for the city. And to get those Tiger Grants, these are extremely competitive. And it was one of the largest grants that they received. And we received very good feedback from the secretary about the application itself. So we're thrilled. I think Richmond is thrilled. It's not going to be a big lift to deliver the project, but it should be really transformative for them.
We should also let people know that going back to the Silver Line, that Secretary Fox was present at the opening of the Silver Line, and the Secretary and the Governor, I think, spent a couple of minutes talking to him about that Tiger Grant, and you should know that that was nice.
Actually, Virginia got three Tiger Grants. We got the one for the bus rapid transit. We also got a little over $15 million for the port, some rail back to port. We received a smaller one,
a little over
$3 million for a bridge. So we did very well in the Tiger Grant application this year.
Yeah. And one more, actually, this is a DC project that Virginia will be helping to fund, is for environmental work for the Long Bridge in the crosses from DC to the railroad between DC and
Virginia. We don't control the money, so I don't consider that.
What is we're adding
money. I thought my money comes in. Now, let me tell you one thing about the Silver Line, because that would lead me to the next topic I want to talk to you about briefly. I was amazed, it was a great opening, I was amazed that all the people who opposed the project were there on the podium sharing in the results. So I would just put that out. That's right. So my point is that I know many of these projects were dealing with conflict, but we're gonna stay steadfast and do the right thing. Which leads me to House Bill 2, as we talked a little bit about yesterday. You will be receiving talking points. I would like for you to, once you get those, to go contact your local representative, let them know what's coming. Two things to keep in mind. We are not done with the process. I mean, so you will be the ultimate judge of the process. And two, the bill does not, you still make the decisions on what you fund. All the bill does is ask us to score them. It doesn't say you have to fund them in order. It says, but you have to let the public know why you're funding these. Which gets back to these other projects, like Route 29, like the 630 interchange. We are free. We think that's the right thing to do to fund, which we have. We will score the projects to let the public know. But we are not, this is not a bill. I know there's a lot of people running around saying, oh, we're avoiding this and avoiding that because of House Bill 2. House Bill 2 only says you score them. It is still up to this board to make the hard decisions on how we allocate the money. It is another guide to help you. It's hopefully that it will give us a less political way to look at things. But at the end of the day, it is still this board's decision on how to allocate the money. And I think that's the takeaway we need to go back to our communities in, is that there will be judgment used in this. This is not a black box where you put it in and it spits out, and that's what we, you know, that's what we're going to do. It is going to give you a tool to use in helping us deliver these projects more objectively. But it does not say, now, there are those who believe it does, but it doesn't say that. And I've spoken directly to the speaker, and he understands, you know, it's his bill. It's his bill. And so he wants transparency in the governor, in the process, and that's what the intent of the bill is. It is not to dictate, it's to give guidance and to justify why we did things, which I think is a good thing, very good thing. So I just leave you with that. I know we'll have a robust discussion of that. It's going to be a two-day meeting in Richmond, and I suspect we'll probably start before the afternoon, because I have to take the workshop itself and take a whole day. So I would say it would probably be a full 2 days on that. With that, the TAMS contracts and some other things. So we'll be busy. So you will earn your pay this time. Which, by the way, is what you got in meals this weekend. Don't expect much more. And we'll thank Mr. Fralin and others for a great time here these last few days.
Well, we get to come back and
What?
Yeah,
2 months.
Because you might as well be back here in November. Is there any other items? Yes, Mr. President.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. As a corollary of the HB 2 in your discussion, will the districts be briefed, or are they already briefed, as a commissioner, on those projects that have been affected by HB 2 that we have that list of, and those projects where dollars are pulled off in the out years because of the budget constraints?
They have, the districts have been briefed, but it's also an ongoing dialogue as we get down at the project by project level, making sure that we are following HB 2, and as we discussed yesterday, making sure that we bring projects if they're subject to House Bill 2 to a logical stopping. So it really gets down to a project by project level. With 4,000 projects in the 6-year plan, there are a tremendous amount of nuances. We need to take a look and make some business decisions and say, yeah, this project here, we have brought that to a logical conclusion. If you look at a 6-year plan, you have projects that are PE only, you have projects that are PE and right-of-way only, you have projects that are study only, you have projects that take you all the way through to construction delivery. And so all of those are a little bit different in terms of the world of how it's built.
So as each of the members of the CTV and our districts go back, say sometime in the next 2 weeks, we could sit down as our DA and go over that list and go over what's on, what's affected, what's not, and they'll be conversing. That'll make us conversing.
Absolutely. I would encourage that.
Yeah.
I would encourage that. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be busy the next few months, actually probably next year. Nothing more. But let me tell you what this also means is that, you know, truly the responsibility will rest here. Truly. It won't be the plate set by others. We'll make recommendations. But this will also really, you know, with all the authority comes the responsibility. I would expect the 6-year plans to be very robust discussions in the future as we go through and looking at these allocations. But, you know, it's what it should be, because with these additional revenues that the taxpayers are paying, we ought to be good stewards and let them know why we're doing certain things. Okay, any more comments before we, I guess we're going to go to visit with Mr. Brule and about 300 other people as to some enhancement projects and other things around the state. Not hearing none, meeting's adjourned. Thank you all for coming. Thank you.